It's time. It's time to open your eyes. It's time to open your mind. It's time to grow up and face reality. It's time to lock and load because it's meat trapper time. Welcome to another edition of Meat Trapper Radio. Now, tonight's show is going to be a little bit different. We're going to talk tactical tonight, but it's going to be common sense tactical. And one thing that is common sense is to support people who support you, sort of like interlocking fields of fire. Now, as you know, Meat Trapper Radio is brought to you by SouthernSnares.com. And so if you're in the market for snares, traps, trapping supplies, lures, baits, you name it, be sure to check out SouthernSnares.com. I know a lot of you have purchased your snares and traps from them. I certainly appreciate that, and I really enjoy getting all the feedback from you as how pleased you were with your purchases and everything. So keep it up, and just know that I thank you very much. Now, when I say we're going to talk about tactical stuff, we're going to get into AR-15s, load-bearing equipment, mag pouches, all of the nitty-gritty tactical type stuff. But you know, I'm not a gearhead when it comes to that. I'm not a Navy SEAL. I'm not a Delta Force commando. I'm not an operator, and I did not even stay in a Holiday Inn Express last night. But I'll tell you what I am. I'm a fellow from Alabama who's been around the block, and I've been all over Central and South America. I've lived down there, worked down there. I was in El Salvador during the height of the war. I've been to Honduras, Nicaragua, Panama, Venezuela, Paraguay, Brazil, Bolivia, and I don't mean going down there on vacation and going to the beach. I've been in some out-of-the-way places, and in most of those countries, we carried guns out of necessity. And when you're down there in those situations and you're not in the military, you don't have all of the best equipment, you don't have a full supply chain, you don't have everything handed to you it's where it all works together and it's all thought out. You just sort of have to scrounge up what you can, where you can. And one thing that I learned was to always watch the locals and see what they were using and how they were using it, because those guys had to make do with very little, and they made the best out of what little they had. And that always left an impression on me, and I think it carries through to a lot of my attitudes and opinions today on gear and gear that I carry, because I carry a mix of military stuff and civilian stuff, because a lot of times the civilian stuff is just better gear. The military gear is it's very well made, it's very durable and everything, but it was made for very specific purposes so that everybody had the same stuff, and a civilian, he's not under those constraints. And so we'll get into all of that. But the reason that we're getting into this is what's really important, and this is what you need to understand. Because, there's been a movement afoot lately, a counter-gun movement, an anti-gun movement, and it was all based on the school shooting down in Florida. That was the incident that they seize upon to make a big deal out of things and to launch the movement. And now they're putting kids out there, little high school kids, and of course, if you say anything bad about, kids, you hate kids and all of that. But just recently, former Supreme Court Justice Stevens. Now, Justice Stevens is retired from the Supreme Court, but up until recently, he was on the United States Supreme Court. Okay? He was on the United States Supreme Court, and he presided during the Heller decision. And if you don't remember the Heller decision, that was the Supreme Court case where Washington, D.C. had made it illegal for you to have a gun in your home. Yeah, in the nation's capital, where they're supposed to enforce the Constitution, it was illegal to have a gun in your home. And the NRA fought this in court, took it to the Supreme Court, and they won. But, you know, Justice Stevens voted against the NRA and voted to support making it illegal to have a gun in your home. And he recently came out, and he was a very honest liberal, which is a rarity in today's world, because those are the biggest, most lying, hypocritical SOBs I've ever seen. Now, the rhinos, the Paul Ryans and the John McCains and the Lindsey Grahams and Mitch McConnells, they are some lying hypocrites, but they don't hold a candle to the average Democrat. Okay, the average Democrat takes lying and hypocrisy to a whole new level compared to the rhinos. But Justice Stevens was refreshingly honest, because he said, you know, all of these marches and protests and demonstrations and petitions and all of this stuff that the anti-gun people are doing, he said, you're wasting your time. He said, really, what you need to do is just repeal the Second Amendment. You need to focus your efforts on completely repealing the Second Amendment. And he said, because from a legal perspective, people have a right to own a gun. And you're not going to restrict that right because of the Second Amendment. And until you get rid of the Second Amendment, you're going to continue to struggle uphill. And so here's the thing is, the former Supreme Court justice just saying we need to just scrap the Second Amendment. And see, ultimately, that's what the liberals really want. Now, the funny thing is they're going to get on Facebook and they'll get around the dinner table. And, you know, whenever you run into these people, you know, they all have the same talking points, that nobody wants to take your guns. We don't want to take your guns. Obama didn't try and take your guns. Nobody wants to take your guns, which, of course, is a freaking lie. But it's the way that they disarm you. Then they say that after nobody wants to take your guns, the next thing that they're going to say is, we're just asking for some common sense, reasonable restrictions on these weapons of war. Now, notice how they control the language, how they use the term reasonable restriction. Reasonable. Because you see, if you don't automatically agree with everything they say, you're unreasonable. You see, if they're asking for stuff that's reasonable and you object, there can only be one word for you, and that is unreasonable, because you're the if you want the opposite of them and what they want is reasonable, then you by definition are unreasonable. They're very good at controlling and manipulating the language of debate, which of course puts us on our heels every single time. And there are ways to fight back and counter this, but what I'm talking about all this is for is simply because you need to understand, you being able to own an AR-15 is in nobody's best interest other than your own. It's not in the government's best interest. The government doesn't want you to have AR-15s. Liberals don't want you to have AR-15s. Nobody wants you to have an AR-15 except you. Because everybody else wants to tell you how to live. Everybody else wants to dictate to you. And that AR-15 stands in their way. It's very simple. Now, like I say, I'm not a big military tactical gear. I'm not big on all of this fancy expensive stuff, you know, that you see people parading around with. And I'm not going to tell you what to buy or why to buy it. But what I will do is I will share my thoughts and what I buy and why I buy it, what I use and why I use it. And maybe that will give you some food for thought and help factor into your decision-making process. Now, of course, the first thing that you sort of kind of have to have in order to get into a tactical discussion is you need a weapon. And whether you go with an AK-47 variant, or whether you go with an AR-15 variant, whether you go with an SKS, even a lever action with a scout scope on it, whatever, the individual weapon is not important. The operator that operates the weapon is important. Their skill with the weapon, their knowledge of the weapon. Because I would much rather go up against one of these little Antifa punks toting an AK-47 than I would a good old boy with a lever action 30-30 and a scope that knew how to use it. You know, so it's not the gear, it's the person behind the gear. But nevertheless, we want to make sure that our gear works and that it's solid. And I have to tell you, for the weight and for the ability to produce firepower and for the availability of aftermarket components and accessories and the ability to customize it, to change calibers and to build out on the platform, the AR platform is extremely difficult to beat. And it's my platform of choice for a tactical rifle. I do dearly love a 30 caliber rifle, and you can get 308 ARs. I have not gone that route, at least not yet. So I'm a 5.56 guy when it comes to ARs. Now, there are a couple of routes that you can go when looking at getting an AR, and I would highly urge each and every one of you to consider owning one if you don't already. And when most people are looking to get into this stuff, they usually look at the entry level stuff for obvious reasons, because, you know, most people are not made of money. I'm certainly not. And when you start looking at how much this stuff costs, it can be expensive. And so most people they start looking at the budget entry level guns, such as the Ruger AK-AC-556 or the Smith & Wesson M&P gun. And basically, you're talking about $500 guns, more or less. Just depends on what's on sale and where you're at and that sort of thing. And there is nothing wrong with those guns. Those are perfectly serviceable rifles. They will certainly get the job done. And then on the other end, you can look at what I call the weapon snobs. And these guys, they all have to have their Daniel Defense, this, that, and the other. You know, and if you're not spending $2,500 or $3,000 for an AR, then you're just garbage and you're just wasting your time. You know, you're just a noob that you know, is not to be taken seriously. And you need to understand the difference between those entry-level guns and the top-line guns. It's just components. You know, the barrels, the triggers, the receivers and how they're made. It's the quality of the parts and the durability of the parts. And also the consistency in manufacturing has a lot to do with it. And so I'm never one to go super cheap, but then again, I'm never one to go super expensive. I always seem to settle on the middle of the road items, whether it's knives or anything like that. You know, you don't see me carrying a $600 Randall, but I don't have a problem with a $250 forged skinning blade. So that's the kind of guy that I am. Now, my favorite source of AR weapons and accessories and all of that, the first place when I'm looking for something, the first place that I'm going to go is Palmetto State Armory. I love me some Palmetto State Armory, I tell you. When it comes to value, to me, that place is... it's hard to beat. And that's where I bought my AR from. Now, Palmetto State Army Armory, or we'll call them PSA, that's their abbreviation. They not only sell weapons, but they put together their own guns. They have their own line, PSA Arms. And for my money, that is probably the best value in an AR. I purchased their AR Freedom rifle, and this is about a $700, $750 gun, you know, so you're about $250 up from the basic bottom line entry level guns, but you're still well below the $1,500 level, $2,000 level Daniel Defense type professional grade guns. But for $700, $750, when you look at the quality of the components that PSA puts into their guns, the quality of the barrels, the quality of the trigger groups and all of that, it is a phenomenal value. It really is. And so that's where I would urge you to look. And if you, if you're getting into ARs and money's tight and you're looking at a $500 gun, I would seriously urge you to save another month, another 2 months, whatever it takes, and get that extra $200 and go one cut above entry level and take a look at some of the PSA weapons. Very, very good stuff. So now that you've got your AR, the next thing you need to think about is ammunition. And now when I go out and I shoot and I'm doing my target practice and running rounds through my gun, I'll shoot cheap ammo. No two rounds about it. You know, I don't have a problem shooting cheap ammo because let's face it, when I'm shooting my AR, I'm not trying to be a sniper. I'm not out hunting or anything like that. I'm working on ranges of 150 yards in. Now, I know a lot of people will object to that statement, but I'm just telling you, I live in the deep south. There's a lot of greenery. In the city, places are built up. Even in the suburbs, it's built up. And you've got to be out on an open field to have a shot longer than 150 yards. Okay? That's just reality. Now, if you get out in the woods, and let's say you're overseas in a hostile situation, when you get out there and people are moving, they're running, they're ducking, they're laying prone in the grass, in the weeds, in the brush, you can't see a man at 150 yards. I mean, it's just that simple. So my area sort of dictates my training methodology and what I'm training for. But when it comes to combat ammo, you can bet your boots that I buy the green tip ammo, the 62 grain green tip. That stuff, man, it'll go through mild steel. It's seriously good ammunition. It comes in 420 round cans. I buy it by the can and I stack it. So we can sort of safely assume that we have our weapon and we've got our practice ammunition, and then we've got our go-to ammunition. And you need to stack it and lay it deep, believe me. But then the next thing is your tactical gear. And this is where everybody sort of, in my opinion, goes off the deep end, because you've got all of these chest rigs now that are popular, where you have the plate carriers on the front where everybody's putting their armor plates, and then you've got the mag pouches on the front, and they get into, you know, what kind of thread it's sewn with, and is it, you know, made in America thread, and all of this stuff. And you get out there, and I mean, people are paying $300 and $400 for a chest rig. Now, if you're a Navy SEAL, that's one thing, but I'm not. And so once again, we have to look at what area that I live in and what my perceived threats are. And this is important, because your perceived threat and your perceived mode of employment is going to dictate your gear. Now, I don't plan on taking on the FBI. I don't plan on fighting the Marines, okay? If you attempt that, you're going to lose. Okay, if you go head-to-head with these guys, you're going to lose. They have, you look at the weapons, the tactics, the satellites, the drones, the technology. It's unbelievable what our government will bring against you if you oppose them. If you actively oppose them. I mean, as far back as the Ruby Ridge standoff with Randy Weaver, the United States government positioned reconnaissance satellites over Idaho to take pictures of Randy Weaver's spread. That's how far they went back then. What do you think they're doing now? I mean, they've got robots, they've got drones, everything. They'll use acoustic weapons against you. And I don't want to get too far off in the weeds, but there's training facilities. There's one up in Tennessee that it's off limits to civilians. And you got to remember, your government has the best. They have the best weapons, the best ammunition, the best of everything. And they have an unlimited supply of it, because if they need more money, they just put a gun to your head, take it out of your paycheck, and go buy what they want. And if there's not enough in your paycheck, they'll just print it out of thin air. But you and I can't do that. And you know what? We don't need to do that. We don't need to match all of that. The whole model of unconventional warfare and resistance and guerrilla insurgency is that we can make do with much less, and we can cause the enemy to spend much more to counter us. It really becomes an economics thing. When you look, I mean, if you think about, you know, how much a cruise missile strike costs, and when we hit something, we blow up a bunch of tents, you know, how many millions of dollars do we spend to blow up tents? And we do it over and over and over. And that's a win for the enemy. Even if we kill the target, tents are cheaper than cruise missiles, and they can put up tents long after we run out of enough money to buy cruise missiles. And so we don't have to outspend them, whether it's weapons, tactical gear, or what have you. Now back to the perceived threat. When would I need to use an AR? Okay, if I'm not planning on actively opposing the government, when would I need to employ an AR? Why do I need one? Well, living in the Deep South, we have hurricanes on a regular basis, tornadoes. If you have ever been in the aftermath of a hurricane, you understand what looters are. You understand that there is no electricity. Many of the roads are impassable. You're not going to be able to pick up the phone and call the cops and say, hey, somebody is looting my gasoline. Somebody's stealing my generator. There's no lights. You can't see anything. And so what happens is communities sort of band together and form neighborhood watches. You've seen, you know, pictures on the internet of you loot, we shoot, and guys standing there with their guns. That's exactly what happens. And this is a very specific scenario of when you and your friends would need to have ARs, and you'd need to be able to go out and patrol. Now, in that situation, do you need full battle rattle with armor plates and all of this stuff? No. No. As a matter of fact, you could get along just fine with a military-style pistol belt and a mag pouch on each hip. A double mag pouch. You put two mags on your left hip, two mags on your right hip, one mag in your rifle. That's five 30-round mags. That's 150 rounds of ammunition. And I would certainly hope, hope that if you had looters coming into your neighborhood, that you could handle the situation with 150 rounds. Because if you can't, you're in deep, deep doo-doo. Okay? There is nothing wrong with the old-style Vietnam LBE gear where you have the H-style suspenders and a pistol belt and you hang whatever you want off your belt. Nothing wrong with that whatsoever. In fact, if you'll think about it, it would be better to put your money into a quality weapon than into quality web gear. Let me say that again. You will be better off putting your money into a quality weapon than into quality web gear. If you were going to spend $200 on a chest pouch, a chest carrier, take that $200, tack it on to the $500 you were going to spend on a budget-level AR, get you a above-line AR, and then go out and spend $30, $40, $50 on web gear. You would be far better off, okay? Because nylon is not going to win the fight for you. Your weapon and your skill with your weapon is going to win the fight for you, regardless of what quality nylon or even Canvas that you have. Because, you know, if you'll think, during the Vietnam era, that's what our soldiers wore, was the H harness, the pistol belt, and all of that stuff. And it wasn't until we got over into the sandbox stuff that we started going to this full front chest pouch array of gear, where you wore a plate carrier, armor plate, and then you had your mags all in front of you. And you got to understand, one of the reasons that they went to that type of system is because our soldiers were no longer fighting the war on foot. They, you know, nobody walked across the Saudi border and walked to Baghdad. They rode to Baghdad. And so everybody is in vehicles now. Even on patrol in Afghanistan, they're in Humvees or what have you. And so there's a lot more vehicle mobility, whereas in Vietnam, there was very little vehicle mobility. Now, what effect this has on your web gear is that in Vietnam, when you were patrolling on foot and the enemy opened up, you went down on the ground. What if your mags are on your chest and you're laying prone? Not good, okay? That means to get to your mags, you have to roll up on your side, which increases your target exposure. If your mags are on your hips, you can lay prone and retrieve a magazine. Very simple. Another thing, if your mags are on your chest and you go down on your chest and you're in mud, like, I don't know, say in the deep south in Alabama where we have swamps, not good, okay? But if my mags are on my hip or on my side, it's a little bit different situation. I'm not laying on them and squishing them in the mud. So those are just some things to think about. And you see, there is no right answer. There's no wrong answer, because you have to think about how you would be employing your weapon and what your area is like. And that's the good thing about being a civilian, is you get to pick and choose what you want, and you don't have something handed to you and said, this is what you're going to use regardless. So now, when it comes to, and I like the term that Dave Canterbury coined, called common man. I don't like poor man, you know, or cheapo gear. I don't go for that. But common man means, you know, everybody's got limited funds and we need to get the best value for our money that we can. One of the companies that I routinely shop at is MidwayUSA.com. Okay, it's just MidwayUSA.com, where you have them. You can click on their website and go to their military surplus, and they have a very good selection of stuff. They don't sell any crap. They don't sell any garbage. You know, it's not like Cheaper Than Dirt, where you have to really pick and choose to find the diamond in the rough or whatever. If Midway sells it, it's good to go, and they stand behind it, and you can return it. It's not a problem. Now, what I personally carry as far as my gear and my webbing is they have what they call a fighting load carrier. And this thing is nothing but a mesh vest. See, once again, mesh. I'm in the deep south, okay? It's a mesh vest that has rows and rows and rows of molly webbing sewn onto it. And that's it. It's just a plain mesh vest with all these rows of webbing, and then you get to buy whatever pouches you want, and you get to put them wherever you want on the vest and configure it however you want. And see, that's what I like about it, is that it's configurable, because I can wear this vest when I'm hiking, when I'm hunting, when I'm paddling a canoe, or when I'm picking up the AR and going outside to see what went bump in the night. Now, as far as Midway is concerned on their surplus, they have a very good system in that they have three grades of everything. They'll have a grade 1, grade 2, and a grade 3. Now, grade 1 means it's basically unissued gear. It's pristine, perfect, right out of the bag. Grade 2 means it's been issued, but it's in very good condition. You know, you can tell it's not in the bag anymore. It's been used. It's been worn. But there's nothing whatsoever wrong with it. And then grade 3 is gear that's been issued and it's been used, but it's still functional. Now, grade 3 gear might have stains, might be dirty. Some of the edges of the webbing may be rolling up from, you know, how webbing will roll up sometimes. It may have people's names written on the gear in magic marker, different things like that. It's been used and it's been worn, but it's not ripped, it's not torn, it's not coming apart, and it is perfectly serviceable. And, of course, the prices vary accordingly. I have ordered grade 1 gear, grade 2 gear, and grade 3 gear. I like grade 1 and grade 2, but the last batch of mag pouches that I bought from them, all they had available was grade 3, and so I bought a few of them. And I got to tell you, there's nothing wrong with them. They look about like what my gear looks like after I use it for a year. Okay? So if that gives you any idea on that, don't get hung up on these different grades or whatever. Now, the way I have my vest set up is I don't have canteens hanging off of it. I don't have butt packs hanging off of it. I've got mag pouches, and that's it. That is it. Because this vest is set up to where I can slip it on, grab my rifle, and out the door I go. And it's because in my area, for my intended usage, if it's a power outage, if there's a tornado that's come through, or if there's a hurricane that's knocked everything out, you know, if there's some type of civil unrest that's going on or what have you, I don't need to carry food and I don't need to carry water. I need to carry ammunition. And once I get night vision gear, I'm going to carry night vision gear. But I don't have that yet. And so you see, my loadout is purely enough to support my rifle over the next few hours. Because in my community, I live in a community with 28 homes. There's one way in, one way out. I really don't foresee being out in the field for 3 days in a situation like that. So what I'm telling you is I'm tailoring my gear and my loadout to what my perceived use is. And I may be completely wrong on what the perceived use is, but that's the best judgment that I can make based on the facts as I see them and understand them. Now, if you live in a deep rural area, that may be something completely different. If you live in a desert area, maybe completely different. You know, somebody that lives in the desert says you don't carry water and you're going to be out for a few hours, you're insane. And they're right. They're right for them in their area, but they're not right for me in my area. And so the message that I'm trying to convey is you can take $1,000 and you can get set up and have a very good infrastructure in place. Okay? And then over time, build up your ammunition and your magazine supplies. Now, I think one other thing, as far as hardware and all of that stuff, I'm a big Magpul guy. I have never gotten bad Magpul gear. I try and standardize on things as much as possible. I don't like to mix and match. For instance, when it comes to magazines, my P-Mags, I standardize on one type and one style of magazine. I want everything to be the same. I want everything to work the same. I don't want to have to remember that this one is different from that one or anything like that. The next thing that I want to talk about on this is scopes and optics, okay? Because I've done a lot with this. And once again, I'm not the kind of guy that goes out and buys a $1,000 German scope. You know, they're nice. I hunt with guys that have Schmidt and Bender scopes, that have Zeiss scopes. You know, that's very impressive. But you know what? They don't kill any more deer than I do. And what's funny is one of my best deer rifles is a Winchester Model 70 243. And I have a rubberized Tasco 3x9 scope on it. And I have killed the crap out of deer with that rifle. And I bet you that scope was a $39.95 scope back when I put it on it in the 90s. I have never touched that scope. It has never lost zero. And I kill the crap out of deer with it. And people look at that rifle and they're like, can't you do any better than that, man? And I'm like, I don't need to do any better than that, you know? And so when it comes to scopes, for my money, optical glass scopes. That's a more expensive scope than a red dot. And I believe in putting more money into a glass scope than a red dot scope. One of my favorites is Burris. I like Burris scopes. I like Burris mounts. I have a Burris Scout scope on one of my lever actions. And I always use Burris mounts. They're made in the United States. They're solid. And I'm not knocking any other scope. I've used Leopold's, nice scopes, Weaver's, you know, I've used Nikon's. There's nothing wrong with any of that, but I like a Burris scope. They seem to be very well made. They seem to be very solid. And Burris scopes and mounts have never let me down. Okay. Now, when it comes to an AR, one of the things that's a little different about scoping an AR compared to scoping a traditional bolt-action rifle is the way the stock is set up. It can be a little bit tricky. And so what I use on my rifle is called a Pepper mount. And that's P-E-P-R. And that's an abbreviation for proper eye position ready. And basically what this does is this sort of shifts your scope forward. If you look at it, instead of being a vertical scope mount, it comes up vertically and then it angles forward towards the muzzle. And that moves your scope out a little bit, because when you bring that AR up and you have that short stock, even if the stock is extended fully, this puts your scope right where you need it as far as eye relief. Now, if you don't want to go all the way with a Burris scope, another good brand is Vortex. I've had very good luck with Vortex scopes here lately. They make different lines and different prices scopes, but they're lower level scopes. I've been using them for, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years now, and I haven't had any problems with Vortex scopes. So if you look at any of my guns, you're probably going to find either a Burris or a Vortex scope on it. Now, when it comes to red dots, unfortunately, I don't have an ACOG. I would love to have an ACOG, but I don't. That's just one of those things that I can't afford right now. And what I've had very good luck with that's a very reasonably priced red dot is a Burris Fast Fire. And it's a 3 MOA dot, which is 3 minutes of arc, which means at 100 yards, the dot covers a 3-inch circle. I've done a video, if you want to look on my YouTube channel, where I did some lever action reviews, and I put a lever action with a glass scope and a red dot scope and talk about the differences between them. And basically, it's fundamentally the same thing. If you go and look at the conclusions that I reached on that video, it applies to ARs as well. Well, one of the really nice things that I like about my Burris Pepper scope mount is that it has a Picatinny rail on the top, so that I have my primary scope, my optical scope on the rifle, and then on top of that, I have my little bitty Burris Fast Fire, so that if anything happens to the optical scope, I've still got a red dot on it. Or if I'm in a situation where a red dot would be a better choice, I've got both optical and red dot on the same rifle. It takes up very, very little room, adds very little weight. The last thing I'd like to add about scope mounts is I believe in quick detach scope mounts. Once again, the Burris QD, the quick detach Pepper mount, the thing holds zero. You can pull that scope off the rail, and you can pop it back on and go back, lay down, and shoot the target. And you may be a half an inch off at 100 yards. And for me, that's good enough. Because once again, if somebody is running, weaving, bobbing, a half an inch isn't going to make a crap bit of difference at 100 yards. What's going to make a difference is whether or not you can see them and you can put enough fire downrange accurately enough to neutralize that target. So anyway, this is sort of my thoughts on ARs, my thoughts on tactical gear and scopes. One thing that I am going to be working on this coming year is lighting. As far as lighting for, putting a light on your rifle. I have a friend that is that's big on lights, and I tell you, I think he's bringing me over to it. So I'm doing some work, and I don't want to make any comments until I know what I'm talking about fully. But there's a lot as far as lumens and batteries, and you know, do you want rechargeable batteries or not? Do you, you know, and all that sort of thing, and what effect lumens really have? Because I can tell you, you can double the lumens from a flashlight, and it's not going to double how far you can see, not at all. And so it really comes down to how bright do you need, and what the battery life is, and how long of a battery life you would need. And that goes back into your scenario. You know, if you're out there after a hurricane, and it may be 3 weeks before electricity comes back on, 4 weeks, a rechargeable light may not be that great of an idea unless you have a way to generate electricity and recharge that light. Whereas if you had a light that uses regular CR123 cells, you could stock up and have a box of those, and you don't have to worry about generating power to have your light. So as you can see, there's a lot of variables in it, a lot of thought that goes in it. And just remember why this stuff is important. And I'd like to play a little clip for you to remind you.
Your handovers, we don't want you to feel pity for us. We are coming for you, and we are going to get everything that you own. It's ours.
Now, isn't that an interesting clip? And you can see this is sort of what Clint was talking about recently. When, you know, he was talking about how people, if people are brought up to think that they don't have something because of you, then they get resentful and they think, well, what you have really should be mine because it was you that took it from me to begin with. And as I'm recording this, the Palestinians are over there rushing the border with Israel. And personally, I could care less. I don't have a dog in that fight. I could care less who wins or what happens. That's their problem, not mine. I don't think my tax dollars should be spent to solve either side's issues over there. But what I do find interesting is some of the tactics. Number one, Israel actually has a big fence, and they have plowed a big berm along behind that fence. And it makes an excellent defensive position on their side. And what they're doing is they're using snipers, and they're shooting the instigators. In other words, they're not up there with machine guns blindly mowing down the women and children, because that's the first thing the Palestinians are going to do is push out all the women and kids, you know. And that way you're tear gassing the babies, and, you know, you hate kids, and, you know, you're a monster and all this kind of stuff. And so to avoid that, you know, the IDF set up there with snipers, and what they would do is they would observe these people rushing the fence, and they would find the leaders, the ones who were giving instructions and all that sort of stuff, and they would shoot the leaders. Just let that thought sink in. Shoot the leaders. It's a very effective strategy. It's working very well. But you ought to look at some of those pictures and just see the thousands of people rushing towards the fence, towards the border there. It's quite eye-opening. And I hope it doesn't come to that here. But of course, in order to have a situation where you would defend the border, you would actually have to have a border, and you'd actually have to have a fence, which, you know, we don't seem to be too concerned about. So anyway, it's a beautiful day today. A bright, bright blue sky. And we've had wonderful weather. But, you know, there's a lot going on in the world. The Pope just stood up and said there's no such thing as hell. And, you know, that's interesting. The Catholic Church, man, that's those people, they need to do some thinking between all of the pedophile priests and now this Pope. That's it's a lot to think about. And what's funny is back in the 1980s down in Nicaragua and El Salvador, the Jesuits were real big down there with their liberation theology, and from time to time, when communist guerrillas would get ambushed and killed, there'd be a Jesuit priest down there carrying an AK-47 and right next to his Bible, you know. So they've been at this a long time. This is nothing new. But anyway, the last thing I'd like to talk about is at the end of every trapping season, I go through a little cleanup scenario where I go through all of my gear, all of my traps. And over the season, you know, I'll do stuff like I'll buy traps to review them, or I'll buy traps to experiment with them, to try them out. And in the end, I'll either decide to load up on them or not load up on them. And when I don't load up on them, I end up having, you know, three of these and four of those and, you know, six of these and five of those that I don't really need. And so what I'm going to start doing is I'm going to have a Patreon giveaway where every month I'm going to have a trap giveaway. And that's what I'm going to do is I'm going to have these odd lots of traps. And they can be, you know, footholds. They can be, you know, body grips of different sizes and different brands. And I'm simply going to choose a $5 Patreon supporter or better, because I have a list of everybody. I'm going to assign everybody a number, and then I'm just going to randomly draw a number. And whoever his number is drawn is the winner for that month, and they will get the traps. And if it's something that they can't use or they don't want, they'll have the opportunity to decline and say, no, thank you, I appreciate it, but I can't use those where I'm at or whatever. And then it'll go and I'll draw again. So if you're interested in supporting my channel and supporting this broadcast, check out patreon.com/meattrapper. And you can unlock a lot of bonus content there. I have my resistance trapping series. I think we're up on episode 11 right now. From time to time, I do bonus content. Like the other night, I uploaded a copy of a master film. It was called Dersu Uzala, and it was a film that was made by Akira Kurosawa, who is a master Japanese director. He's a master of lighting and effect, and he filmed this in Russia during the Soviet era, and the story is about the old Russian Imperial Army Clark back in 1908, I believe it was, and they sent a column to Siberia to map and explore, sort of a Lewis and Clark type of thing, go explore and map everything. And they ran across this indigenous trapper out there, and the guy, his name was Dersu Uzala. They ran across old Dersu out there, and he was an old man, and his family had been wiped out by sickness, and he was alone. But he was a master trapper, a master bushcrafter and woodsman, and so they retained him as a guide, and the movie is the story of Dersu leading them through Siberia and what eventually happened to him. And the movie is all in Russian, but I was able to find a copy of the English subtitles, and I dubbed the English subtitles on top of the video, got it all synchronized. And so I have a copy of this, and that's what I uploaded on Patreon so that people can download the movie and watch it themselves. And, of course, this is not content that I can put on YouTube. YouTube, for some reason, has a worldwide ban on this video. If you uploaded it, nobody anywhere in the world can watch it. It's immediately flagged for whatever reason. So I had to host it on my Amazon account and let people download it. I'm going to be doing some stuff with the Green Beret Gourmet, which is a funny little cookbook. It's got all kinds of recipes, and it was written by a guy who was in the 5th Special Forces in Vietnam. The book is long out of print and virtually impossible to find, but I have a copy of it. And so that's the kind of stuff that I put up as bonus content, and everything is a sign of my appreciation. So I hope I haven't rattled on too long. And I hope this has been of interest. And if you're looking to get into the AR field, I hope it's given you a starting point. And if you have any questions or comments, let me know. meattrapper@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowances for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies. Or being hated, don't give way to hating. And yet, don't look too good, nor look too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same, if you can hear the truth you've spoken twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life for broken, and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools. If you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss, and lose and start again at the beginning and never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are done, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you, but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 40 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it. And which is more, you'll be a man, my son. The Kipling poem is one of my favourites since I was a boy at school. My father read it to me once. And I think it to me as a little boy, it summed up what a man should be. And later on, when I became an actor, there were a couple of lines in there that affected me. One was, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same, it's a very good thing for an actor, because an actor's life doesn't consist of any medium things. Everything is either a hit or absolute disaster. So there was that one. And then there is another line, which is, if you can hear the words you've spoken twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, well, that's the press as far as actors are concerned, because you're always seeing something and you go, wait a minute, I never said that. And so it stayed with me all my life, right until this very day. You know, the war, for a start, took my dad away for 6 years. I never forgave it for that. You know, war disrupts everything. I was evacuated on my own and ill-treated and all that sort. Everything went wrong, you know. Peace, things go right. I was a soldier when I was 19. I spent my 19th year in Korea as a fusilier infantryman. And so I know what I'm talking about when I talk about war. And it's the most disgusting thing that you could ever think of. And I've also noticed with every single war has been declared by men who are too old to go. And it's made me suspicious.